Not talk about Trump, everybody.
Come on. Well, since you mentioned
we know it. Star Trek and Trump. We know what's coming.
Star what?
Any questions that aren't those. Hi, guys. Welcome. Just want to remind you guys the movie is opening in L.A. and New York on Friday, and we'll be expanding on the 22nd and 29th with our going really wide on the 29th. And if you have a question, just throw up your hand, and I'll kind of call on you as we get going.
It's very chilly in here.
It is chilly.
Can you repeat when it's the opening?
This Friday in L.A. and New York, okay. And then expanding on the 22nd and the 29th.
Okay.
Fred.
So is the poster intended to evoke the Clash London Falling album cover?
Sort of. It actually is a screen grab. That's actually Anton from the movie in that pose. So it's a bit sort of serendipitous that it ended up being that. It looks just like London Calling. It also, I noted that there's a thrash band called Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, DRI, and that looks strikingly like that logo. So I think it sort of evokes the perfect pose. Thanks for that, Anton.
You're so welcome.
Yeah, but that's a real deal thing.
Yes, I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot, but I want to ask you anyway because I'm a big fan. So talk about working with Patrick Stewart in this character that's unlike what Patrick Stewart has ever done before.
Yeah, the thing is, it's actually not. I mean, he has a decades-long career on the stage.
But he's scary,
we're all aware of the franchises that he's associated with in the marketplace. And it's my job as a new filmmaker. I mean, I've been making movies since I was 8, but having access to that level of
Patrick
talent.
Stewart wasn't in your movies when you were 8?
No, well, no. I mean, he may have been an action figure, yeah. But not the real deal. But, you know, I don't have reverence for studio franchises. I don't have reverence for perceived market value or foreign sales assessments. And I think I use my ignorance as a tool, because I just want dedicated actors. I just want people who have a certain amount of craft that can help me tell very grounded stories. So we had to completely ignore his stature is, of course, deserved as a craftsman, but as far as all the other affiliations, you know, this whole film is about shedding affiliation and becoming who you are. And Patrick just wanted to try something new. And was shaking things up, and I benefited from that timing where he was handed a green room at the moment where he wanted to try something new and a bit nefarious. I think he was attracted to playing the villain, but not just to be a sadistic, evil villain, to be someone with a sort of brutal pragmatism and that could still be a very subtle performance, but had carries so much weight.
Second row.
Hi. I noticed that you spoke about, in the press materials, they spoke about mosh pitting, and they spoke about how while it appears very violent, there's actually a lot of camaraderie inside, and so there's a lot of dichotomy from what people expect as opposed to the reality of the situation, and that seems to be a running theme throughout this film, in which you have complex characters who, in many ways, are neither evil or good. And I was wondering if you could tell me more about how your background shaped these characters being so complex.
The thing is, does it actually say moshing? Because I tried to edit that. It should be slamming.
Okay.
We never call it a mosh pit. at least back in the 90s. I write intuitively. And I try to channel the characters, and I don't, of course, want to add complexity, but I like to add different currents as far as like who's doing what and where. But it's very environmental, you know. And the characters that I was referring to, for me, they didn't need a lot of backstory or falsely injected layers, but they're based on real people that I know, and so there's not a lot of that, you know, typical band conflict. Because there's no record deals here. This is not like fighting over million-dollar contracts. These are just people who are in it for the common experience. And again, the shows themselves are kind of pathetic, but they're so beautiful because there's these people performing to a crowd of like 11, and they're getting taped on a cell phone or whatever it is. But the performances are real and the energy is real, and that's what I was really trying to capture. It's like these are real people and the energy is real, and of course throughout the whole the cast, you know, on screen, it's really not that much of a challenge to vilify Nazis. It is a challenge to humanize them, you know, and to show them as victims too, you know. What I know of that culture, you know, because back in the 1990s, there were skinheads at every show, and many of them were Nazis, which was odd. A kid from Virginia going across the bridge, seen in broad daylight, people wearing combat boots and swastikas, and what was so repulsive about it was also so beautiful, because they were there with the Hare Krishnas and the vegan kids and the tough guys from New York and Boston. What an insanely diverse crowd. And there was violence. And the whole thing about, you know, the slam pit is, it's consensual. You get there, it's the energy. It's such an explosive sort of outlet for physicality. It's what I was looking for. I was like a jock without a sport. I hated organized sports. I wanted something to do. And so my whole thing is with the characters is treat everyone with respect and with reverence. And when lives are lost, as brutal as it might be, you know, I want people to feel the impact and know that these underlings, these Nazi skinhead soldiers, you know, the whole thing is if anyone there could erase the night, they would. They don't want to be there. They're forced to. And that's the dynamic I was exploring, is like the complexity of hierarchy and power structure, pretty much.
Hey, just wondering, you mentioned films like River's Edge and Apocalypse Now. Just wondering, what did those films, how did those films inspire you as a storyteller, and as well as the energy and the aesthetic behind punk rock? How did those influence you in writing Greener?
Yeah, I definitely referenced, you know, war movies and more grounded films, because this is a film about tactics. You know, it's ultimately a siege thriller. It's not really a slasher film. Now, certainly the horror fans can latch on to certain elements. I mean, it takes place in a concert venue with black lights and graffiti, and it looks like a haunted house. And the makeup effects will satisfy any horror fan, that's for sure. But the way I treated the interactions and the violence itself was war. So I was referencing Platoon, Apocalypse Now. And River's Edge was just an atmospherically perfect film for me. I mean, it actually is a Pacific Northwest movie. It involves some metalheads, but it's not about being metal. It's this beautiful noir tale about, you know, a murder and friends banding together to try and, you know, cover this up or do the right thing and call the cops. So it was more atmospheric, and that's what I wanted to really, when I was giving marching orders to the cast and crew, it was keeping it grounded. We're making a war film, not a horror movie, no matter what it ends up being or categorized as. Yeah, that was to keep it with real human interaction and I think reference, you know, real life violence.
We've got two questions in the second row, and then we'll come back to front row. Go ahead.
It's for Anton. What is about Jeremy's work that got your attention to accept this role?
You know, I thought I saw Blue Ruin, and I just thought there was this really kind of beautiful melancholy quality to it, and I think that came from for me, the fact that, you know, Macon Blair, who's wonderful in it, and I was so looking forward to working with him when I found out that he was in this film, struggles to figure out, you know, it has a sort of traditional arc in the sense that you're it's a revenge tale, but what you come out on the other end, and this is where it strays from the revenge tales, that there really is no reason. You know, he's searching for a reason, and he discovers that there isn't any. It was an absurd act, an impulse. I believe this is an impulsive act, to quote Green Room. Yeah. But it is. It's, you know, it's all impulsive and it's all absurd, and that's part and parcel of being human. And we tend to build these systems out of logic or order or structured space to assuage how terrified we are that we're going to come out on the other end and it is going to be absurd. And I found that really moving. And and you know, and then I read the script, and it was a punk rock film in a very like earnest way. Like, you could tell whoever wrote it loved this and experienced this. And I came to know that Jeremy indeed had. And I thought, okay, it has a very similar, though it's a different film, there is still that melancholy undertone of people for no good reason, falling in deep shit and trying to figure their way out of it and coming out on the other end, realizing that it was just deep shit and they got into it. And it's kind of heartbreaking to me, and that sort of propelled me through trying to work on this character, is that kind of feeling. Now, that being said, I think Jeremy's films also speak to me in ways that are, on an aesthetic level, I any movie that feels like, oh, there's a metal club in like backwoods of, is Blue Ruin not Delaware, it's Virginia, right? Or it's Delaware.
Blue it Ruin. Starts in Delaware and ends
right.
in Virginia.
It ends in Virginia. I can't remember if the metal bar is in Virginia or in Delaware.
Virginia.
And I just thought, oh, well, this is fucking cool. This is cool. Like, people don't really have metal. That feeling, that like kind of like, I guess like it's just like a punk rock feeling about it. And I love that. I've always loved that. And on so many levels, I could, you know, and also just the way that Jeremy treats actors. Like, you watch Blue Ruin and you realize, like, there's so much affection for Macon's performance in that film that I was like, all right, well, this person clearly, you know, Macon's wonderful, but they're also clearly working with a filmmaker that is ushering their performance to be sort of beautiful like that. And so I, on all those levels, I was so sort of... just really wanted to be a part of this film and feel fortunate that I am, and wanted to work with Jeremy. Now, having worked with Jeremy, I mean, fuck. Like, no, just kidding. Totally, totally, totally kidding. Couldn't be farther from the truth.
Now, what can you say about making a punk rock horror film where the punks are actually fighting an authoritarian right-wing group as opposed to just doing it through a two-minute song?
Technically, they're ultra left. Okay, let's get these are white national socialists. Okay, no, but the whole point of is about ideology not really mattering. This is actually about soldiers and about preserving enterprise, and that was the key. Is like whatever the marching orders are, where they fuck the system, or let's fight over ideology. What they're really fighting for is something they have no clue about, which is someone else's enterprise. And that is very relevant, I think, to today's culture. And what was one of the few intentional, like, political undertones of the movie was about hierarchy and power structure and who's giving marching orders and for what reason and who is fighting and who is getting hurt. And maybe it's for reasons that don't actually benefit them. What are we fighting for? No. So the punk rock sort of mentality was infused in the entire movie, even how it was made. You know, it was like, it's this crazy thing. I wanted to just fast track it. I didn't want to overthink it. I didn't want to develop it. I wanted just to blurt this script out, shoot it exactly as I intended it. And before people knew what the hell this movie was, it's going to be released in 2 days. So, but no, the punk rock style is like, and that mentality is there, but it's also about breaking it down and just shedding that punk rock mentality and becoming just a human survival story. Because maybe your favorite band doesn't really define who you are.
You guys went up at the same time on the front row, so I'll let you just fight for it.
Anton and the other actors in the band actually looked like they were real musicians. Are you guys... musicians?
I don't like to say that I'm a musician because I feel like that's slighting people that are actual musicians. But I've played music with my friends. I had a kind of a crusty punk band. Alia played some guitar and has an incredible voice. I mean, her singing voice is just ethereal and beautiful. Joe and Callum are the most impressive. I think Joe to me, just particularly because I've tried to play drums and it just is so fucking difficult. And Joe had 6 weeks to learn to play hardcore punk, you know, and like keep the time. And that it's really fast and it's really hard. And he, by the time we got to shooting those scenes, Joe was playing the drums. And by the way, we shot our first day was the Mexican restaurant scene and he was playing the drums. And so I was wildly impressed with him. And not from like, I'm a musician. No, just like as a human being, I was like, holy shit, look at this guy learning the drums. And then Callum, who I think has really sick vox, was just pregnant. I don't know where. That's just Callum. Callum's just an odd dude who knows how to channel that in this wonderful way. And so we all sort of came together. And you know, I think because I have played with my friends who are, by the way, infinitely much more talented than I am when it comes to their instruments, and have definitely put up with a lot of shit for me in terms of like me just trying to play music at their level. I felt really strongly that when we got together, we'd have to actually, I knew we had to learn these songs, but part of knowing what it's like to be in a band is trying to write your own stuff. And like, it doesn't matter if it's bad. It doesn't matter if none of you can play your instruments. It's the fact that you share ideas musically and that bonds you. And we ended up doing that. And actually at the rap party, we played one original that Ali and I had written. Joe rapped, which this came out of nowhere that Joe is like a good rapper. Joe was like rhyming over this beat that Alia and Callum and I were playing. And so I think by the end, like we could have, like if we had had a little more time, we probably could have played a gig even, you know, is like really cool. And I'm really...
You might have gotten bottles thrown at you.
So. Yeah, well, that would have been fine. That would have been, you know, I would have taken that as a positive sign.
Anton, I was going to ask you, with every film, it's shot out of order generally or not completely in order. So for you, how was it keeping that energy up and also working so much in a confined space with the other actors? I mean, did it get a little like, you know, hot in your work area? And how did you bring that adrenaline every day to this?
I mean, it was a total shit show, really. Like, that's how I felt. It was just, you know, we shot our exteriors first because this is per Jeremy. There's seasonal change. I'm going to have to say that Jeremy was dealing with a lot of things that I had no idea about. And that's to Jeremy's credit as not just a director, but a human being, that he preserved our kind of innocence in a way that we were just focused on our thing. But I did know that we had to get exteriors out of the way. And then we spent 20 days in the green room. And I want to say we pretty much shot in order because if there was blood that was spilt, you know, on the floor of the green room, that had to be there in the next shot and so on and so forth. So I want to say for the most part, after we got in there,
it was almost all in order except for a few things based on the big concert with all the extras.
Right.
Some pit bull action. So,
right.
But by and large, it was chronological.
And I think part of my job is to maintain emotional continuity. Like, I do that in all the... It's one of the things I'm doing is, like, mapping out where this person should be because, you know, you're not really fortunate enough ever to shoot in order. And this film is takes place in 16 hours, but over the course of 16 hours, so many changes are occurring that the characters take for granted that the actors can't. And so a lot of it was mapping it out, but a lot of it, too, was watching everyone else work. I mean, because I've never quite been, I've never been with a cast that is under so much emotional duress in such a confined space for so many days. And you end up inevitably feeding off of that, whether you want to or not, and that ends up informing your performance. And everyone was so... I mean, gung-ho to say the least about their feelings in the moments that, you know, one of the most beautiful things I shared was with Callum during, you know, this, you know, really horrific scene that I just felt like so, I still feel really connected to that guy because of that, which is, you know, Callum's also a wonderful dude and we're friends, but there was something about that was like from that moment on we would carry on in this one way because you're sharing things with people that you don't know at all. I mean, you've known them for like 3 or 4 weeks that you wouldn't share with your best friends in years in a way. Like it takes years to get there, but everyone's sharing it and it informs each other's performances.
It was exhausting. I remember some crew members weeping.
Yeah.
After
Tracy, our script supervisor, was like...
I wasn't going to name her name, but yeah.
No, but Tracy knows. I love Tracy.
Keep
I love
generic,
her.
Generic, man.
No, I love her. She's the best. I want to shout her out.
Maybe a question the second row.
Hi. Questions for both of you. If you're going to cast Donald Trump in a Star Trek movie, no. Okay. I want to know what some of your favorite punk rock songs and/or bands are. Maybe influenced you.
Well, I mean, so the thing is, I don't have a lot of knowledge about the bands because I was there for the experience. And most of the bands that I heard in the 1990s, I mean, they're two-syllable tough guy sounding bands. And they're kind of gone. I'm a huge fan of, you know, like the Minor Threat, Black Flag, Bad Brains. I wore this shirt today, Gut Instinct, because they're a lesser known Baltimore hardcore band, and that I fell in love with them. And they're tough guy stuff, but they're introduced to me by the real Sam. You know, a lot of these characters in Green Room are based on real people, and the real Sam introduced me to this band. But you have a lot of favorite punk bands too, right?
I think my two favorites are the Misfits and Bad Brains. I think Misfits, like, they have an EP when they were thrown in jail in London. And, like, there's three songs on it. One of them is London Dungeon. I think Glenn Danzig's amazing. Sam Hain's amazing. Like, he's just pretty great. And that video
zombie, my junior, like, high school film, Zombie Town USA.
I've never seen that.
Misfits all over it, man.
Is that, yeah. Yeah, I actually
cool
listened to
Night
the,
Out.
Oh, yeah, cool, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so good. Oh, the songs are so good. I listened to the Bad Brains' first record every day to work. Like, I don't know why. And it wasn't even, it had nothing to do with the mood as much as, like, the you know, it's so ferocious. Like, Bad Brains are, like, from a different planet. Like, they descended to play this crazy music.
Fuck that, they're from D.C.
Which, you know, which to me is a different planet. I mean, I grew up in the valley, you know, so.
My question is, I love that you kind of made this claustrophobic horror movie, because I think that's where, you know, the whole genre started. But what's your pitch to people that have gotten accustomed to these big monster, you know, set piece movies? You know, what's your pitch to get them to come see this?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's an exercise in downscaling. And I think by steering clear of spectacle and artificiality and pyrotechnics, if you make it intimate and relatable, that the tension you'll experience in Green Room, I think I can say is 10 times what you'll experience in any of these big studio franchise movies, because you will not only experience real peril, but you'll experience the elation of survival.
We have time for one more question.
Not to talk shit about Star Trek, which is coming out soon in July.
Thanks, Jeremy.
I thought your authenticity of this film and the story was, it blew my mind. I lived in that same era where laces meant something.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered what made you decide how much to put in the story and how much not to. You talk about the red laces and earning them, but you don't actually tell the story. And I thought that was such an interesting choice and so brave. So I wondered why, what that thought process was and how much you wanted to tell.
Well, see, I wanted everything to be there. I wanted to build the complete world and know a lot more what's happening sort of underneath. But the rule I have is that the characters must speak amongst themselves, not to the audience. And the funny thing is, if you trust in the audience, like, you don't have to know everything, but you have to understand that you are dropped in a real world, and there's no questioning this authenticity, because you feel like, yeah, you might not get every bit of dialogue that's shot back and forth, but you know, it's sure as shit that the people who are talking know what they're talking about. And that with that authority that you can create by depriving people of certain information or not trying too hard for exposition or monologues or why we're punks or why we're Nazis, you feel fully immersed in the world, and so you don't doubt it. Even if you're trying to play catch-up, I think catch-up is actually a device I use to have people just start to lean in and become much more aware, and they open their eyes and their ears, so when the shocks come, it's that more effective.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.